Civilization acknowledges that the Greeks gave to us democracy, and democracy ended in Greece. The war grew more vicious and more senseless in Vietnam. The stench of death mingled with apprehension of the future, the danger of a broader conflict. The nation was faced with its most dangerous political rift and its most serious moral crisis since the Civil War. And to be sure, in June of this last year, Israel had a grand deliverance. A magnificent gamble paid off in military victory. But there was no peace. And before June and after June, the great powers of the world, East and West, had no compunctions about selling arms and sending men to train the armies of nations determined, pledged to erase and eradicate a neighbor. Africa seethed with bloody internecine rebellion. China seethed with a rebellion run amok. The specter of Nazism rose in Germany, and the shadow of anti-Semitism lengthened across the communist world. And its words were spoken by racist fanatics in our own nation and in both camps. The fires of the ghetto roared in our cities, and the brickbats of ugly racial violence filled the air of the white enclaves outside the ghettos. Men wondered during this last year, where was the decency of man? Where the sign of progress? Now, every year has its litany of crisis. What made the last year unique, I believe, was its psychic cruelty. It stripped from us every one of our comfortable assumptions that there is an institution out there, a nation out there, which will somehow muddle through and make things right for all of us. We looked to the United Nations to keep the peace. Instead, we saw the United Nations hasten a war with its precipitate removal of the emergency force from Sinai and from Gaza at Nasser's command. We looked to diplomacy to arrange accommodation and negotiation between nations, peace. Instead, we heard empty words, self-serving words, which debased the coin of human hope. And while men were meeting, endlessly meeting, to organize a Geneva arms control, and their capitals announced, each and every one, massive increases in the nuclear arsenal. We look to our own nation for vigor, and maturity, and sanity. And we found our nation paralyzed by Vietnam, mesmerized by military solutions which promised only higher casualty rolls in a broader war. We had serious problems in our cities with the other America, the disenfranchised, the abused America. And we had determined some years back to wage war on poverty. Last year it became clear that war had never been joined. Prudence, fear, ideology, prejudice, all had combined to turn a war against poverty into a few demonstration projects, which did no more than whet the frustration of those who were outside the camp. The headlines were dark. Behind the headlines, there were portents darker yet. For each bit of news, each crisis was its own way, only the visible symbol of the deeper problems of the race. The problems which, by and large, we are content to sweep under the carpet and to put aside. The problems of population, the problems of ignorance, the problems of poverty, the problems of the increasing gap between those who have and those who have not, the technological shock, the abuse of our natural resource. Last year, as in the years before, nations continued to elbow and to claw, each for its own narrow advantage, on a shrunken globe which can support life in decency only if there is a united, worldwide attack on the ills which beset us. Last year, every week, the nations of our world spent more for armaments, for guns and tanks and planes, than they spent during the whole year for population control and to limit starvation. And our own nation spent more every day on luxuries than it spent an entire year on clean air and clear water, on living space and conservation. Last year we heard that there were 300 million more illiterates in our world than there had been 10 years before, and of a third of a billion more who suffered from malnutrition. And so it was. And man's mood was one of disillusionment, bordering on despair. Fatalism, futility were in the air. Men said, the old diplomacy, the desk chair diplomacy, which busies itself writing carefully and artfully contrived white papers to justify dark deeds, and the old citizenship, the armchair citizenship, token contributions, taxes, an annual visit to the polling places, all of this is not enough. The world needs a new vision, new institutions, and a new heart. Otherwise, there is no hope. And some said there is no hope in any case. Some simply cut their ties to life. Some of the youngest of us, the most idealist and the most innocent, simply walked away. They would have no part of a world they'd never made. They asked only that that world not brutalize them and destroy their remaining hopes. And so they found what consolation they could in love and aimlessness and the dark loneliness of the inner depths. And many more joined them, many who were shocked by their beards and their bare feet and their LSD, many who were addicted not to drugs, but to the good things of life, to the luxuries. And these resigned quite as completely, but more genteelly. They built high walls against the surging problems and the sweeping masses. They asked only to live and to let live, to let be. They wanted no part of our world's problems. They had no time but for themselves. The world heard last year again and again the demeaning rhetoric of excuse. And at every excuse for inaction, some simply scoffed at government. They found every reason to contemn those who lead. They said that every man could be bought. They mocked and they scoffed as if mockery was itself a form of citizenship. And some held in contempt all the traditional virtues of mankind. They looked on life not as an obligation, not as a responsibility, but as an endurance contest. And they said, ask not of us. It is enough that we live. And some there were who complained and whined about a world into which they were born and which they had never made, forgetting that their children, our children, are being born into a world of our making. It was a strange year. Man was not at his best. Excuse, adolescence, The whining of children was heard from the lips of the adult. And then the shofar sounds. The clarion summons. A different world intrudes upon our conscience. The shofar is demanding and insistent. The shofar says very simply, your problems are human problems, and since they are man-made, they are capable of human solution. The shofar says, look to the imagery of Rosh Hashanah. You know it well. There's a book, a ledger, a divine ledger, the book of life. And God inscribes on that book, on one page or another, our fate, our destiny. Some for blessing, some for harm. Now, God does not write aimlessly. He's not a creature of fancy. He is the judge. In a sense, we guide his hand. For we have already written the verdict by our deeds, by our glory, or by our failures. Man's destiny is man's. The years need be dismal and will be dismal if we lead dismal lives. A folding of the hands, a throwing up of the hands, surrender, a turning within, a turning away from the world. It breeds the very disaster on which fatalism preaches. But the energetic man, he who is willing to reach out and to dare, to try, to scale the heights, to dream the great dreams of the race, such men, united, can bring light to the histories and to the dwellings of men. The shofar sounds. Have we the courage to hear its call? Fear speaks through us as we listen to its sound. And fear makes us say, there are casualties in every war. You summon us to a battle against the forces of evil, where we can be hurt and we can die in that struggle. 1,000 young men died this June in Israel. Many have been badly beaten, who sought only to serve the poor in our city, beaten on the streets by those whom they came to help. Nations do not and have never been known to tenderly care for their saints and their prophets. How can you ask me to dare to be a soldier in the front line? The shofar answers, yes, there are casualties and there is danger. But what joy is there in an aimless, purposeless living? Do you want to be a prisoner of war for the rest of your life, a prisoner of your fears, of your timidities, judging everything by what others may say, fearing to speak your mind, fearing to dare your dreams? Do you want to serve a life sentence, shuffling along from assigned task to assigned task, confused and bemused? Is that life? Is it not a living death? And what is life? Life is to love deeply. Life is to labor purposefully. Life is to dare and to care. All else is sheer existence. Yet you may be a casualty, but you will have lived. And what a greater blessing is there than that? The shofar sounds. And as we listen to its call, uncertainty speaks through us. We say, I'm only one. I'm alone. What can I do against the tides of man? I cannot hold back history. I cannot change human destiny. And the shofar answers, I do not summon you alone. I summon the congregation. And the congregations have responded in time as today. You are not here alone. You are with your neighbors and your friends. Your hopes are human hopes. Your aspirations, human aspirations. Think not that you are unique. True, you cannot know the private thoughts of another. True, the mores of your competitive society teach you to be suspicious and teach your neighbor to be suspicious of you. True, you have broken down the family unit till it is encapsulated in nuclear. You have cut the ties that used to bind men to community. Unfortunately, alienation is a sociological curse of your age, but it is not the testimony of human nature. There is something in men, in most men, in almost all men, which responds to my call. Your dreams are their dreams. You are not unique. You are not different. Or if we were to translate this into the traditional imagery of our people, in each man there is a spark of the divine. Now, if you have snuffed it out, in some, perhaps in many, it burns but dimly. But it burns. And provided oxygen and air, provided kindling and wood, and it will blaze forth. Seek, create the thrust of civilization. Work with others to create the goodness, the stability, the wholesomeness in your society, and you will find swarming to you all or most. Think not that you stand alone. And so we hear the rousing cry of the shofar, and yet timidity speaks through us. And timidity has us say, I'm an ordinary man. A father, mother, I do what I can, but I am not a molder of human destiny. I do not hold history in my hands. What can I do against the storm clouds which are gathering all about? The shofar answers, I do not summon simply the princes of the people. I summon all Israel, the high and the humble. I summon the prince and the pauper. I summon the humblest of the artisan, the teacher of the children, the mother, the parent, the child himself. I summon artisan and technician, craftsman and healer, all. For think not, my friend, that peace is a treaty, signatures on paper. How many treaties have been signed between France and Germany? Was there, is there peace? What is peace? Peace is wholesomeness, a stable society. Peace is a happy home. Peace is a school which inspires and encourages and enlightens. Peace is the friendship which destroys the loneliness of age. Peace is the helping hand which breaks anyone free of his fears. Peace is care for another, sympathy and gentleness. And think not that freedom is revolution, that only the man who raises high the banner and shoots the gun, only such a man is a champion of freedom. Freedom exists because of simple things, because of men who are silent and compassionate, because men who are men of conviction yet understanding of other points of view. Freedom exists because men think and understand the complexities which underlie and must undergird their judgments. Freedom exists because there is stability and wholeness and sanity in the human society. And justice is not a burning proclamation, complicated language in a musty tome. Justice is your relationship with your neighbor. Justice is your understanding of the obligations of citizenship. Justice is your patience with people of other persuasions. Justice is your ability to master inherited preconceptions and prejudices. Civilization is the achievement of all, or is it the achievement of none? Moses brought a mixed rabble out of Egypt, a ragtag of peoples. And though God spoke through him, though he was second to none among men, he could not mold that ragtag into a nation. No leader, however determined, however exalted his passions and principles, no leader can take a people which is not whole, not sound, unconcerned, disinterested, selfish, and create of that people a nation which is sound and hale. And no society which is filled with decency and understanding No society of dignity, no society of freedom will for long tolerate the leader who sets his greed above the need to serve. The shofar sounds, and weariness speaks through us. I have worked, I have labored, I have spoken and argued and given and served and cared. I'm tired. Send another. And the shofar answers, I summon all men, the veteran and the draftee, those who have served and those who have yet to serve. For there are many ways to serve. And if you can no longer be among those who storm the bastions of privilege, you can be among those who destroy the high walls of hate, who have the patience to encourage, to teach, to care, to tutor. There is a place for every man, for every skill, and for every age. The shofar summons each of us. And weariness speaks again, near exhaustion. I have labored, and I have championed, and I have sought that blessed day. There is no more in me to give. I am burnt out. I'm tired. What more can you ask of me? And the shofar answers, I do not summon you to the battle line. I summon you to the synagogue. I summon you to touch base with the traditions, the grand ennobling traditions of your people. I summon you to sense again the surging power of your history, the nobility of your heroes, the grandeur of your law. I summon you again to draw close to your God and to draw upon his inspiration. If I had not summoned Israel in each of his generations to the synagogue, to his God, Israel would have been broken. It would have been drained and an easy prey to the ill winds of fate. But here, within these walls, our people has found encouragement and renewal. And so I summon you to pause, to think, to draw waters of joy from the wells of salvation, to draw on the inherited vision of our people, to catch your breath, and to catch hold of your faith. And you will find unexpected resources of strength that each may in his own way go out and serve his fellow man. And so it is that on Rosh Hashanah we read in our synagogues the great section in our Torah which tells of the sacrifice demanded of Isaac as sacrifices are demanded of every man. And the cost of Abraham, the cost upon him is greater than he had bargained for. And the cost upon us, in all cases, is greater than we had bargained for. But unlike many of us, Abraham is willing to meet the test. He is willing to take his son and to offer him, to take all that he has and to offer it to the service of God and man. And he sets out on his journey. And he has no hope of reprieve. And yet, as he sets his son upon the altar, there is a surrogate sacrifice. The ram is caught by its horns in the thicket, ready to be offered in place of Isaac. And the ram's horn, that horn is our shofar. That horn, that shofar, is the symbol of our hope. We cannot penetrate with our eyes beyond the mists of time. We cannot know that our utmost effort will avert the evil that we fear. But the shofar sounds, and in that summons there is not only the call to duty, but a statement of hope. Fear not, ye children of men. Fear not that your hand is too short to save. Fear not that you cannot bring peace, sunlight into the habitations of men. Yours not to descry. Yours not to describe the future, but to make it. And so the year has drawn to a close, a dismal year, a year filled with dark portents. And the new year opens, an unknown year filled with uncertainty. And Rosh Hashanah reminds us, the shofar reminds us of the simple truth. Tomorrow and the day beyond, our future is not sealed. It is not fated. It need not be malign. Need not be disaster. It can be a future of burgeoning sunshine, the dawn, hope for men. And that future, the sunlight or the darkness, is in our hands. The shofar calls. Will we not answer?